Hello, my friends. This is Kevin Swanson. We are on sabbatical until the end of January. But first this, if you listen to this program, you know that occasionally we will point out that God has an interest in the justice or the injustice of governments. We must use God's law to limit the tyranny of governments. At least that's our position, but that's highly unpopular with many modern Christians today. Some would be horrified to think that governments might be restricted to God's laws, and that God's laws might provide an equitable view of justice when it comes to the civil magistrate. Well, this also demonstrates the gradual weakening and apostasy among the modern Christian Western world. That's why I compiled this little book, Keep the Faith, on the Family and Sexuality. We have done extensive research on what the church fathers and reformers and the most important Christian leaders in the church over 2,000 years say about the application of God's law to the civil government. You see, we don't stand alone here. You would be surprised what the Christian church has said about applying Leviticus 18 and 20 to the present day. With Christian leaders now endorsing incest, polygamy, homosexuality, homosexual marriage, isn't it time we find out what the last 2,000 years of the Christian church said about God's law applied to these areas? Are you curious now? Do you want to know whose side you're on in history? Get a copy of Keep the Faith on Family and Sexuality. That's Keep the Faith on Family and Sexuality at GenerationsWithVision.com.
Welcome into another edition of Generations Radio. I'm Adam McManus, in for Kevin Swanson, who's on sabbatical through the end of the month. Available here at GenerationsWithVision.com. January 22nd, 1973, of course, is the Roe v. Wade decision of the Supreme Court, the egregious decision that was handed down that made the children in the womb a target. And sadly, since then, nearly 50 million baby boys and baby girls have been systematically killed as a result. Here we are 42 years later. Mark Crutcher joins me now, president of Life Dynamics. You can learn more about them at prolifeamerica.com to give us a sense of where we are in the battle for the sanctity of unborn human life. Mark, 42 years, how much have we done to overturn this decision, or at least to slow down the death march and the loss of so many innocent lives?
It's very tempting, and you hear a lot of pro-lifers kind of licking their wounds and saying, you know, we really haven't made all that much progress. We're still killing babies at the rate of 3,000 a day. And all that's true, but it's short-sighted. The reality is that the pro-life movement has made enormous progress. Right now, I mean, we've been through some dark years. Adam, you know, you and I have talked many years in the past, and we went through the 1990s when things looked really grim and the pro-life movement was losing on every front. But now things are brightening up. When I started Life Dynamics in 1992, and our strategy is to go after the abortion industry as a business. And so we started out by creating a database of all the abortion clinics in the country. There were 2,126 in 1992. Today there are fewer than 575.
Wow.
So we've closed down 70% of the abortion clinics in this country since 1992. And there has been a corresponding plummeting of the abortion rate. You know, on one hand you say, well, we're still killing 3,000 babies a day, and that's a horrible situation. But in the early 1990s, we were killing 5,000 a day. We're killing 2,000 fewer babies today in this country than we were killing 25 years ago.
To what do you attribute the closing of these abortion mills from 2,126 now to 575?
Well, there's a lot of factors there. One of them is, no matter how pro-abortion somebody might be in the medical community, there's a giant gap between the people in the medical community who say that they support legalized abortion and they're willing to do it. These abortion clinics are closing, and one of the main reasons is they can't keep them staffed. In 1992, when we started this, we did some evaluations of the abortion industry, and at that time, with 2,126 freestanding abortion clinics in America, it was common for them to have three or four abortionists on staff and three or four in reserve for somebody went on vacation or died or retired or whatever it might be. Today, with the 573 or 72, whatever it is, that are left, the vast majority of them have one abortionist on staff. If he's gone, the place closes down. Almost none of them have any reserve abortionists. That's unheard of in the abortion industry today. The American people are beginning to have severe second thoughts about abortion. In the early 1990s, most polls showed that more than twice as many people labeled themselves pro-choice as pro-life. Today, that has completely turned around.
But it seems more than that, that what's at work here is that even within the medical industry, to work in the world of killing babies is considered low-rent, gutter-style work.
Yeah, the analogy that I always make is that the provision of abortion is like pornography and prostitution. The porn industry, I don't think anybody would say, is something that a great filmmaker wants to go into and get involved with. It's something that people who have low moral values, low character, no talent, end up in.
Fascinating.
And the abortion provision part of the medical community is the same way. You could take 1,000 physicians randomly selected from around the country and ask them for their political position on abortion, and you'd probably get 1,000 different answers. But ask them what they think about abortionists, the people who actually do it. At that point, you'll get almost unanimity. They'll tell you that people that get involved in abortion are the scum, the washouts, the losers, and the moral degenerates of medicine.
Wow.
Abortion is the red light district of the medical community. That has never changed. And even some people in the pro-abortion side now are making statements about this, that their biggest failure over the last 42 years has been their complete inability to remove the stigma from abortion. Some of them are not only saying that this is their biggest failure, but that it may not be possible to remove the stigma from abortion. They're right, and we're not going to allow them to do that. The pro-life movement, we've had a lot of problems over the years. The pro-life movement has a lot of warts. But I'm telling you, had the pro-life movement not done what it's done, we would not be standing now on the graves of 55 or 56 million babies as we are. We'd be standing on the graves of 200 million or 250 million or Lord knows how many. I understand the sentiment that people have that we may not have achieved our goal, and we haven't achieved our goal, which is legal protection for every unborn child from the moment of fertilization and in every circumstance. We haven't achieved that yet. But we're exponentially closer to it than we were 40 years ago, and we're getting closer to it every day. And you can go out and read quotes off the Internet where these pro-aborts are saying that they're losing. They know they are losing.
I'm looking at some quotes from one of your websites, lifedynamics.com, which is linked through prolifeamerica.com. Genevieve Green, a manager of Choice Medical Group in Santa Cruz, California, says no doctors want to come and work in abortion clinics. Guess what? No nurses want to come and work here either.
This is the fundamental mistake that the pro-aborts made. You can go back, Adam, to 1971, 69, 70, in that era. And they would admit that there was an enormous stigma attached to abortion. But you can see all these things that they wrote. And even in the early days after Roe versus Wade, they said, look, with legalization, the stigma will go away. That pretty soon it'll just be another medical procedure that every OBGYN and every general practitioner will do in his office. There won't be a stigma attached to it. And it'll just be in mainstream legitimate medicine. That has never happened, and it's never going to happen. And now, even many of them are conceding that it probably will never happen. We're going to make sure that it doesn't. And had it not been for the efforts of the pro-life movement, leave Life Dynamics out of it. I'll just talk about everybody else that's in the pro-life movement. Had it not been for their efforts, they would have mainstreamed abortion. And again, we'd be standing on the graves of 250 million dead babies, not 50 million.
Mark Crutcher, my guest, president of Life Dynamics. You can learn more at prolifeamerica.com. I'm Adam McManus. On this edition of Generations Radio, in for Kevin Swanson at generationswithvision.com. When we come back, a look at specifically what you can do in your community to both reduce the number of abortions in your area and also to affirm the sanctity of life message. We'll be back.
The mark of a good father, according to Jesus in Matthew 7:11, is that he knows how to give good gifts to his children. He would not give his child a stone or a serpent. He would give him that which is nutritious and helpful. Now, Christian parents, if you're like me, you are constantly on the search for good gifts for your children. You're probably tired of cheap China junk and expensive toys that break within a month or two. That's why the Generation staff has spent the last 6 months scouring magazines, checking out samples, interviewing Christian parents, and identifying the very best books for our children. We look for creative presentation, substantive messages, biblical integrity, identifiable characters, and riveting stories. We have sponsored a child picture book contest called Nurturing Little Hearts, and we begin to publish the very best of children's books over the next year or two. But find good gifts for your children. That's a really good thing. We have an entire new section of children's book selections at our website for good gifts that you can get for your kids. Find it at generationswithvision.com. That's generationswithvision.com.
Welcome back to this edition of Generations Radio. I'm Adam McManus, in for Kevin Swanson, who's on sabbatical until the end of January. We're talking on this 42nd anniversary of the Roe v. Wade decision, January 22nd, 1973, as 55 million baby boys and baby girls have been killed since that time, surgically speaking, of course, by way of abortifacients, many more. We welcome your feedback by way of email to this particular podcast at my email address of talkradioadam@gmail.com, talkradioadam@gmail.com. Mark, for those in our listening audience who are feeling overwhelmed by the enormity of abortion that remains in America, 3,000 a day, at once, as you noted, was 5,000 a day. What can they do in their community to help stem the tide, to help reduce the number of abortions in their city?
Well, first thing we need to do is we need to be pressuring, and I don't mean just suggesting, I mean really turning up the heat on our elected officials to either A, do away with Obamacare altogether, or pass legislation that prohibits any kind of government taxpayer-funded program from paying for elective abortion. This is the final chapter in the abortion battle, in my view. The abortion industry, contrary to what a lot of people think, is in deep financial trouble. And Obamacare is basically a industry bailout program for them.
Really?
And if Obamacare goes away, or if it is prohibited from funding elective abortion, the abortion industry will continue to collapse, and it is imploding over this financial issue. Adam, when you take any war and you look at it, at its causes, how did the war begin? And I'm talking about conventional fighting wars or cultural wars like the battle over abortion or whatever. You inevitably find out that wars are fought over one reason, and that's money. Money is the origin of almost every war that's ever been fought in the history of the world, and the same thing is true about this. And one of the things that's happened in the abortion industry over the last 40 years, it's very interesting, and most pro-lifers really haven't paid much attention to it. I'm writing a new book right now, and this will be one of the issues that I detail. Right after Roe versus Wade, studies were done showing what the average cost of a first trimester abortion was in the United States. And it was about $325 to $375. That was the price for about 90% of all the abortions in the country. If you take that same survey today, you find out the same exact numbers.
Mm.
So in other words, in 42 years, they have not been able to raise prices. And yet, during that 42-year period of time, the cost of providing services in the medical community has gone up exponentially. There's some very sound reasons why they haven't been able to raise prices, and I go into those in this new book I'm writing. But the fact is, they haven't been able to. That's where Obamacare comes in. Now, Obamacare is designed to mimic what happens in the private insurance industry today. You can have two women sitting in a abortionist waiting room, both of them 25 years old, both of them in good health, both of them carrying healthy babies that are 10 weeks old in gestation. And let's say that one woman is paying for her abortion with her own cash, and the other woman has an insurance policy that pays for it. The first woman is going to be charged $350 to $400 for that first trimester abortion. The second woman's insurance company will be lucky if she gets out of the door with less than a $3,000 to $4,000 bill.
Wow.
We've proven this. We've seen this time and time again. This has been going on for years.
So they're making up for the loss by bilking the insurance companies.
Right. And what Obamacare is designed to do specifically, and And I lay out the reasons that this is true and prove why this is true in this new book I'm writing. But what Obamacare is designed to do is to take all of those $350 customer-paid abortions and turn them into $3,500 government-paid abortions. And if they don't do that, they are doomed.
Hmm.
They cannot survive doing what they're doing now, continuing down the trail that they've been going down. They simply cannot survive in today's marketplace selling abortions for $350, $400. They can't do it.
I love the resources that you have put together through Life Dynamics, Mark Crutcher. One of them is an abortion DVD with an animated abortion procedure so people can actually get a sense of what we're talking about.
Yeah, we put out some things that show, you know, in graphic detail what abortions look like and the dead babies and so forth. But that animation that you're talking about is something you can show to a five-year-old. And it's very non-graphic, and it's mainly used in crisis pregnancy centers. We put out over a quarter of a million of those DVDs in CPCs. We make them available to them very cheaply so they can hand them out to women who come in with crisis pregnancy situations. But, yeah, it lays out how the abortions are done, and it also details the known complications that result from legal abortion. And this has been something that the media has hidden. And we have a website that's dedicated just to that particular issue called safeandlegal.com, safeandlegal.com. And you can go on that website and see hundreds of names of women that have been killed, and you can see autopsy photos from what it looks like when one of these women dies from a safe and legal abortion. What we have to remember, Adam, is that the abortion industry will implode if we do two things. If we simply expose what goes on inside and we prevent them from solving this financial crisis that they got by using government-funded abortion.
Well, and one of the ways you really help move the pawn across the chessboard, as it were, in terms of strategically exposing abortion mills for what they are, was your now famous book, Lyme 5. For those that have not purchased it among our Generations Radio listeners, Mark Crutcher, tell us in summary, what did you reveal in Lyme 5?
Lyme 5 was a behind-the-scenes look at the way the American abortion industry is operated, and I came out with it in 1996. Now, someone told me not too long ago that they think now it's the number one selling book in the history of the pro-life movement, and we still put out a lot of them. Pro-life groups buy them because the information that's in there is timeless. It hasn't changed. Everything that's going on in there is either as bad today as it was then or worse. Our role within the pro-life movement is to shed light on what goes on inside these places, and we continue to do that. We also, as you know, put out a DVD showing what the real initial motivation for the legalization of abortion was, and it had nothing to do with reproductive choice or freedom or any of this other nonsense that you hear from these people, who decides and all this. These are basically marketing slogans. The motivation for the legalization of abortion was racial genocide. We put out a video called Maafa 21, and we have a website called maafa21.com that people can go to, and they can watch it on there for free, or they can order a copy of the DVD. It is revolutionizing the pro-life movement. We are seeing black people now come into the pro-life movement in numbers that we have never even remotely seen in the past, because they're being shown that the real motivation for the legalization of abortion was to eliminate them.
And, of course, Margaret Sanger was the linchpin for this,
right?
Founder of Planned Parenthood. Maafa 21, M-A-A-F-A 21, what does that mean?
Well, Maafa is a Swahili word. It means a time of disaster or trauma or tragedy.
I see.
It's a word that is very often used in the Swahili language to describe the time during which Africans were enslaved around the world, and particularly in the United States.
And why 21?
21 for 21st century. What we're showing is that the tragedy that started when the first African was put on a slave ship in Africa and sent to the rest of the world, it's still going on today. That is the premise behind Maafa 21, that when the eugenicists in the world saw that slavery was about to end, they were very concerned, especially in America, with what the freeing of millions of slaves was going to do to the economy. They thought it was going to collapse the American economy. Eugenics was just coming into vogue at that time, pushed by a man that was actually the cousin of Charles Darwin. He was the father, his name was Francis Galton. He was the father of eugenics. He coined the phrase eugenics. Before Francis Galton came along, the word eugenics did not exist. He coined that phrase. And the goal was to get rid of what they considered dysgenic groups, those that are closest to the in their view, closest to the primates, to gorillas, and they consider that to be Africans and Aborigines in Australia, and that was the goal of eugenics, to get rid of them, and it was backed by Charles Darwin and pushed by his cousin Francis Galton. We trace the lineage of that from that time until today. I know you've seen the video, Adam. You can see a direct correlation there. There is no broken chain. It is a continuous connecting the dots situation, and we can prove absolutely irrefutably that that was the motivation behind the legalization of abortion.
I hope Generations Radio listeners will go to your website, maafa21.com, and order that moving DVD, maafa21.com. M as in Mary, A-A, F as in Frank, A21.com. The Black Genocide in 21st Century America. On the homepage, you can read these words. They were stolen from their homes, locked in chains, and taken across an ocean. And for more than 200 years, their blood and sweat would help to build the richest and most powerful nation the world has ever known. But when slavery ended, their welcome was over. America's wealthy elite had decided it was time for them to disappear, and they were not particular about how it might be done. What you're about to see is that the plan these people set in motion 150 years ago is still being carried out today. So don't think that this is history. It's not. It's happening right here, and it's happening right now. One pastor in Minneapolis said this film is mandatory viewing for everyone concerned about the future of Black Americans and all people. African Americans are just the beginning. If you think the eugenicist agenda will end with the Black race, you're mistaken. Witness, Oregon's physician-assisted suicide law. Maafa 21 is a well-done, thoroughly researched production. Buy it, shout it, show it. Again, the website, maafa21.com, maafa21.com. I hope you'll get it. I want to call the attention of Generations Radio listeners to your pamphlet, Pro-Life Answers, that has been so widely circulated. How many questions do you provide answers to, and how has it empowered those in the pro-life movement?
It provides answers to all the primary, it's about 106 questions in there that we answer.
Give us an example of two questions and answers, if you would.
Well, for example, they'll say that the reason to legalize abortion is to protect the safety of women. And if you think about it for a minute, Adam, what the pro-aborts have done is pretty clever. They've almost made it seem like we're responsible, meaning the pro-life movement, for the women who would be killed if abortion were made illegal and they were killing illegal abortions. The pro-life movement has almost bought into it, almost kind of just ignored it. But let me point something out here, Adam. If abortion were made illegal today, and next month there were a lot of illegal abortionists popping up, and they are killing women, wouldn't those people be pro-choice? You and I aren't going to go out and open up an abortion clinic,
no.
Adam, and neither is anybody else that's in the pro-life movement. If you boil it down to its essential argument, the pro-abortion argument is this. If you don't let us kill babies, we're going to kill women.
Oh, my.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, logically, because they're the ones who will be doing it. And if you go back even to prior to Roe versus Wade, and then you continue on through the next 42 years, every woman who was ever killed or put in a nursing home or otherwise butchered in an abortion clinic or in an abortion procedure was killed, injured, or put in a nursing home by someone who's pro-choice.
Right.
Now, why are we responsible for that?
Good point. People talk about using rape, incest, and life of the mother.
Okay. If our argument is that the unborn child is morally equivalent to a born child, in other words, there's no moral distinction between a 10-week gestational child and a 10-year-old born child, then if we're going to argue that you can kill the 10-week unborn child because his father was a rapist, then why don't we apply that to the child in a daycare center? How do we make that leap?
Because of the geographical location of the child inside the woman, I guess.
That's the only thing that changes is the location of the baby. That's what the whole abortion thing is about, is where is the baby located? Not what it is, not is it morally relevant, not any of those questions.
Not whose father it has.
Right. If we're not going to make that argument, and by the way, it is a grotesque insult to women to sit here and say that one of the possible, not a cure, but a mitigating procedure, if you've been the victim of a sexual assault, is it will kill your baby. Do you have any idea how insulting that is?
Mm-hmm. on another answer related to what if the child is conceived and raped. Well, two wrongs never make a right, and rape is temporary, but death is permanent. So how is death the answer to the crisis of having been sexually assaulted?
We put out a report here some time ago about under the radar violence and the conflict over abortion about the number of women who are killed for refusing to have abortions. The question is, when you create an environment like this where you say we're going to endorse this act, abortion, in order to protect sexually irresponsible men and sexually predatory men, but the decision to have the abortion rests with the woman, what do you do then when the woman says, no, I don't want to do this? What happens when you have a sexually irresponsible, sexually predatory male whose partner says, no, I won't kill my baby? What happens then? You create an environment in which she may be chosen to be eliminated. We put out a report on this, and all we concentrated on was the women who've been killed. We didn't even talk about the thousands of cases that we can identify where women have been beaten or put in nursing homes because they wouldn't have abortions. What I want to know is, where is the media on this?
Silent.
Why isn't the media out here talking about, if they're concerned about women being killed, if abortions may be illegal, why aren't they worried about women that are being killed because abortion's legal?
Well, and this is why, you know, the Democrats' false charge against Republicans of a supposed war against women just sounds so hollow.
Well, it's preposterous. And by the way, in the November elections, the biggest loser in that was the war on women. We saw a good example of that right here in Texas with Wendy Davis.
Yes.
This was the abortion Barbie. She thought that she could ride into the Texas governorship by pushing abortion in one of the most pro-life states in the union. And they were going to do so on the back of this war on women thing. And the pro-aborts poured millions of dollars, trucked in people from all over the United States here to try to influence that election, and lost by over 20 points.
Yeah, they were trounced. My guest is Mark Crutcher, president of Life Dynamics. Learn more at his website, ProLifeAmerica.com, ProLifeAmerica.com, on this, the 42nd anniversary of the January 22nd, 1973 Roe v. Wade decision that legalized abortion through its companion decision of Doe v. Bolton through all 9 months of pregnancy, even up until the very day of birth. Which brings me to the question, where do we stand legally? Is abortion allowable up until the day of birth, even with some of the states that have passed laws that have different protections in them?
If you read the Roe v. Wade decision, there are places in it where it appears that it restricts abortion after certain points, for example, at viability. But it does so based on the health of the mother. It says that states may prohibit abortion after a certain point, meaning viability, unless the abortion is necessary to protect the life or health of the mother. But what's interesting about Roe v. Wade is they didn't put a definition in it of health. But on the same day that Roe v. Wade was issued, at exactly the same moment, a second decision was issued called Doe v. Bolton. And in Doe v. Bolton, they gave a definition of health as it applies to abortion. That definition is so broad, it basically covers any circumstance under which a woman can be pregnant. So that wiped out what appeared to be a compromise in Roe v. Wade that prohibited abortion. It's not just Roe v. Wade that's the important issue here. When you look at the fact that abortion is legal, Roe v. Wade is the big decision. But when you look at the question of when is it legal, Doe v. Bolton is the big decision.
Mm.
And that's the one that often gets swept under the rug. But yes, Roe and Doe, when combined, they were issued as companion decisions by the Supreme Court on January 22, 1973. When combined, they make abortion legal through all 9 months of pregnancy for any reason whatsoever, for no reason whatsoever, by a girl of any age, without parental knowledge, without parental consent. Sometimes states have passed laws that appear to not be consistent with that, but those laws stay in effect because the parole boards are afraid to challenge them, so they just let them ride. But eventually they will be challenged and eventually go to the Supreme Court, and that's what scares the parole boards to death, because the Supreme Court could, at that point, use those challenges to overturn the whole thing.
I want to call attention to the free stuff you've got at lifedynamics.com. In particular, it's right on the right side of the homepage. You've got pro-life action cards where people can spread the right to life message. You even have access to sending free e-cards with the best pro-abortion versus pro-life arguments, a free pro-life DVD. Tell us about some of these.
People call all the time. They say, you know, I work for a living. I have kids. I have a family to raise. What can I do? It's fine for you guys that are out there working in this every day to come up with all these ideas, and I send you money to make sure you can do those things, but what can I do? that's what we try to do with some of this material. For example, you mentioned the answers book earlier. We also provide all those answers for free on the internet so that people can respond to, like, letters to the editor, or they can write articles for newspapers. We have the action cards that are just basically business cards that people can leave wherever they want to leave them. We have people go to libraries and put them in books, and have people that leave them at restaurants.
And these are business card-sized cards. One of them, for example, says, quoting Mother Teresa, "It's a poverty to decide that a child must die so that you may live as you wish." And then it says, "Stop abortion now." Or another one says, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you." A quote from God. Or, "Some choices are better left to God," referring to, obviously, the child in the womb.
Right.
If abortion is the answer, it must be a really stupid question.
Right. We have some that are kind of warm and fuzzy, as I call them, and some of them that are really in your face. There's 47 different styles that we have right now. Like you said, they can go on that website, and we'll send them some samples of them for free. We make them available really cheap. I think right now they're $3 a hundred. This is a beautiful way for the average person to get the pro-life message out.
They can tuck them in a bill when they're sending a check off to the life company.
A lot of people do that. They'll put them on the bulletin boards at laundromats. There's millions of places you can use these, and they're free advertising. This is important because the abortion industry is so controlling of the media in this country. We don't have the same ability to deliver our message in the media. I mean, I have seen very soft-focus pro-life commercials that people have been willing to run on television and be refused by their television station to run those.
Mm.
But they can't stop us from doing things like business cards and putting those around.
Right. Here's another good one. Abortion, a constitutional right? Remember that at one time the Supreme Court also said owning slaves was a constitutional right. Stop abortion now. Pro-life action cards, Life Dynamics, Denton, Texas, and your phone number. I imagine as these cards are distributed, you probably get some phone calls, don't you?
Oh, yeah, we do. We've had people call and get really mad when somebody calls here.
And others probably call for help, I would think, as well.
We've had that, too. But when people call here and are angry, that tells me we've hit a nerve. You get mad at me, you've got a whole lifetime to get glad again. I'm not worried about it. I'm not trying here to make friends. I'm here to stop abortion. I think an atheist has more reason to be pro-life than a Christian does, because at least we have the comfort of knowing where this baby goes. But if you're an atheist, you believe that this is all the baby has, and that you're taking away everything. There is no justification for someone to call themselves a Christian and be pro-choice. That's totally illogical, and I could give you chapter and verse of why that's true. It's totally illogical to say that you call yourself pro-choice and a Christian. But, again, I think it's a human rights issue. I don't think you have to be particularly spiritual or particularly religious to believe that it's wrong to kill a child.
Mark Crutcher, my guest, president of Life Dynamics. Learn more at his website, prolifeamerica.com. Prolifeamerica.com. Are you hopeful after having seen the results of the November 2014 election and are taking back the Senate among the Republicans and increasing our majority in the House that we are going to elect a pro-life Republican conservative candidate for president?
I'm cautiously optimistic. And the reason I say that is we've trusted the Republican Party for 42 years, and they've done very little. I would argue that we have been stabbed in the back more often by the Republicans than we've been stabbed in the chest by the Democrats.
Mm.
I'm cautiously optimistic. Maybe this time is different. You know, hope springs eternal, right? Maybe this time is different. But there's going to come a point at which the pro-life movement's going to have to decide how pro-life it is. And what I mean by that is we're going to have to send a message to the Republican Party one day that the dating process is over. We're ready to get married. You know?
Guess what? If the Republican Party refuses, the question then remains, would we then start dating a third party?
Or just stay home on Saturday night.
Very interesting. I appreciate what you're doing, even outside all of the political machinations of elections. There is so much to be done, as we've talked about, in terms of having conversations with friends and family and using these cards and getting your book, Lyme 5, and exposing what abortion mills are all about, getting your pamphlet, Pro-Life Answers, and using the arguments there in a letter to the editor, or even in a Facebook post, or in a comment on someone else's Facebook post. It seems like all of national conversation is either on talk radio or in social media these days, and there are a lot of souls that can be impacted with your well-researched arguments through Life Dynamics through ProLifeAmerica.com, Mark, and I appreciate all you do to empower the pro-life movement across America.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me on.
I'm Adam McManus, in for Kevin Swanson on Generations Radio, found at generationswithvision.com. Learn more about me at my website, adammcmanus.net, mcmanus.net, and send me an email with feedback about this conversation with Mark Crutcher, talkradioadam@gmail.com. That's talkradioadam@gmail.com. I hope you'll check out ProLifeAmerica.com and LifeDynamics.com, where you can get access to a lot of their free materials and even order the book Line 5, the Pro-Life Answers pamphlet, the MAFA 21 DVD, the abortion DVD showing the animated abortion procedure. Lots of great resources there. I really encourage you to check it out before your head hits the pillow tonight.